You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 393, and 3 times 3 is 9, and it's also a palindrome, 393, just like Otto. Also, we are here with Staffer Sean and Dynamite Adam White, which is also a palindrome. Welcome back to Punk News Podcast. Adam, like, you remember Hannah is a palindrome?
No, what?
Oh, you don't?
I don't think so.
Or Staffer Sean, you almost definitely don't remember Hannah is a palindrome, do you?
No. I mean, Hannah is a palindrome,
Hannah is a palindrome is, I don't know how wide the birth of Hannah is a palindrome is, but it's wider than I thought it was. It was in our, like, second or first grade reader. And it was like this, like for literature class or I forget what they call it, like second grade, not literature, just reading or language arts. And the story was the teacher has to go outside in the hall for some reason. So, and she's teaching palindromes and she writes on the board, Hannah, it's a palindrome. And then the jerk kid, Otto, like starts making fun of her. And the teacher's like, I had to go out into the hall. Hannah, you can teach the class. And Otto keeps making fun of Hannah because she's a palindrome. And then she's like, well, you know what? Otto is a palindrome. And then that's basically the story. And anyways, people are talking from like California had heard the story, but I didn't know if it would cross international waters or just national lines, if you will. But I guess it didn't.
It's like a classic folktale or something? Or
maybe they don't have books in school anymore, Sean, because you know you live in the future. No, it was like the second grade reader. You know, Adam, you had like a second grade reader, right? Like, kind of, I believe it was like a softback book, and it had like all these like very simply written stories to teach you how to read.
Oh, sure, but I mean, we don't have palindromes in Canada, though.
Yeah, well, I believe there is a palindrome shortage right now. So I believe the president has put a tariff on all palindromes. So it's really, really messing up the word economy, if you will. Anyways, we got a lot to talk about. Let's get off this stupid shit and talk about important stuff. Punk rock. This is the Punk News Podcast. We're here with Staffer Sean. Staffer Sean, what's happening?
Not much. I'm glad to be back on the podcast. It's been a minute.
And actually, I'm glad you're back here too. Staffer Sean is a reviewer, and we're actually going to talk about one of Staffer Sean's reviews in just a minute. We're also here with managing editor Adam White, the bigwig. Mr. Bigwig, what's happening up there in the snowy white yonder?
So I heard on another podcast today that there is something called a comfort blanket. You heard of these? I think it's a comfort blanket.
I've heard of a comfort
peacock. No, not one of these animals that you bring on a plane because you're trying to be a dick. I mean, there's a blanket, but it's full of weights.
Oh, wait, let me, it's for people, for mentally, people with mental issues, developmentally disabled people, that it's a heavy blanket you put on to make them feel like they're being hugged. Is that correct?
I think that everybody might want to be hugged, John. I don't know if it's just the developmentally disabled of among us, but, but yes, I think that's what it is. And I'm sitting here in my basement and it's cold out because the winter sucks. And I have this blanket on me. And all I can think is that now that I know that there is a comfort blanket, this one that I'm trying to warm myself with just doesn't cut the fucking mustard. So can we make them? Can we like do like officially branded Punk News comfort blankets to help people?
The answer is yes. The answer is yes, because my mom's job is she sells sewing machines through sewing machine company in a store, and she often does projects as part of the classes they teach at the store. And one of the projects my mom did once was making comfort blankets. Well, you know, Adam, my mom made our jackets that we wore to
your
summer soirée.
Your mom is amazing, John. So here's what we need to do.
Mom is amazing.
Let's get out of the punk newsing business because, fuck, there's no money there. We just ease into the comfort blanket business, right? We'll keep the same name so we don't scare off anyone. But when all the commenters come to the website, instead of reading about, you know, the dumb new Pennywise song or anything like that, it'll just be like ads for blankets everywhere. And they'll be like, all right, I guess this is what's cool now. And they'll start to get them.
anything to cut down on the anger in the world, I'm a fan of. There's so much anger in the world, Adam. So
anger,
much
anger.
I'm glad we could just touch on that Pennywise song for a second and just move on. So I think that just about covers it.
See how I snuck that in there? That's why I am a consummate professional. I'm like, we should acknowledge that there's a new Pennywise song. How do I do that? Stupid bullshit tangent. That's how we did it. That's a little behind the scenes thing. For you kids out there, they're like, can I podcast one day? And the answer is probably, and just do that.
There you go, Adam White, the Cicero of the 21st century. But that other guy talking there was Stafford Sean.
So shows. I saw Propagandhi last Saturday at the Metro, and I realized this is like the first show that I've been to in a long time that's like just been a normal show at a normal venue with like big respected bands and stuff. Because it's been a while. It's mainly just been like weird one-off kind of performance events and local shows. But I saw Propagandhi. They were great at the Metro. And then also a couple of weeks ago, I saw Brave You, which is the band of a fellow punk news writer. They are going on their kind of record release show.
Well, who's that? You don't have to be secretive about it.
Yeah. So last time, I think I actually talked about one of his bands. I did kind of keep his identity secret, but it turns out that he does reveal his name online. So Alex is the front man of Brave You. He sings and plays guitar in that band. And I went out and saw them in a garage in Chicago.
Yeah.
Which is cool. And then the day before that, before I saw Brave You, I went to the release, or actually one of my bands played for that, but for this record release show for a band called This Is How It Ended in Tokyo. All one word. And one of my favorite local acts in the scene right now. I'm probably going to play them later on this podcast. But just a lot of great shows going on. I've been getting into a lot of great stuff in the local scene. I see that as being typed out now. Should I play this song? Should I introduce the song that I'm about to play?
Yeah, let's play right now. We'll come back and we'll do some mail. And please do tell Adam White the title of this album, because the title of this album is right up Adam White's alley.
Yeah, so the title of this album is April's In, all one word with parentheses around the S, and then there's a comma at the end of the name.
Is this by the band that has no spaces in their name?
Yes, yes.
God fucking damn it, man.
I think that's just a Scrams trope. You know, you have like, I think Page 99 does that.
What is Scrams? I don't even really know what Scrams is. What is Scrams?
It's Screamo before it got commercialized, basically.
Was that name retroactively applied? Like Screamo has been ruined by the Mall Kids, so we need a new name.
Yeah, I mean, it's all technically Screamo, but I like distinguishing it by just calling it Scrams, because I mean it's also just a classification that only applies to most of like the hardcore oriented DIY stuff.
Well, no, I had that problem the other day because I was writing about a band called Stressor from Toronto that kind of has that Page 99 like, you know, Screamo sound from like before Screamo was the label that was applied to, you know, fucking Taking Back Sunday and things like that, right? So I
don't think Taking Back Sunday is Screamo. No,
there was
is it?
There was a while where like all of these like Victory Records ish like emo revival bands from like the mid 2000s, everyone was chucking around the Screamo name for that genre, and there was Page 99, all those kind of bands were around before that and were called that, and they didn't sound anything like that, and it was sort of, it was awkward because they were lumped into it. So I had to use that label, and I was trying to figure out what the Scrams would have been a good one. I was like trying to figure out what to call them, and I was like, I don't know, like pre-revival Screamo, I guess, like from before.
Yeah.
Anyways.
The only revival I'm into is ska revival, baby.
So play this song by this band that hates punctuation so much.
Yeah, so this is the band is, well, they do have a comma at the end of this this album title for no I don't know what the reason is, and also a parenthesis in the middle of the title, in the middle of one word, as to kind of make it ambiguous as to whether it is April is in or April sin.
Maybe they're trying to do a SQL injection attack. Yeah, no one knows what that is. That was a computer science thing. Okay, continue.
So I'm going to play the opener off of April Zinn. It is simply called Three. And this is how it ended in Tokyo with Three.
Tokyo doing Three. And now let's read some mail. You can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. We've got some good mail this week, and I'm pulling up the first one from a regular reader right now, and this is from Dave, and here's what Dave has to say. When are you guys going to do a podcast with Liverpool Neil as part of the panel? I enjoy his letters, especially when they're taking the piss out of one of you, and think the chemistry would be entertaining. Also, I finally got caught up with the year-end episode and wanted to share with you guys one of my favorite albums from last year, which no one on the site mentioned, Tanuki Suit self-titled album. I think John particularly liked the surfy and synthy-tinged punk. And this is from Dave, and you can check out Tanuki Suit at Tanuki Suit for Life. I'll spell it. Tanukisuit 4 lyf.bandcamp.com.
You know, I thought to myself when you said this is a letter from Dave, I thought, well, that's kind of nice. I mean, like, I love Liverpool Neil as much as anyone, but it's good that John isn't exclusively reading Liverpool Neil letters, and then it was about Liverpool Neil.
What if this is actually just from another account that Liverpool Neil is owned?
We have one listener.
Here's one from Kev, and here's what Kev has to say. This is in reference to John complaining about the price of Misfits tickets. I'd urge you to consider another point of view. The band is in a no-win situation. If they charge $25 or even $40 a ticket, then scalpers, or worse, Live Nation, will just buy them all and sell them at a premium. Even though the tickets are expensive, at least the band is getting paid. The alternative is rip-off men lining their pockets and everyone loses. Sometimes this also works in reverse. I live in San Diego, and I'm going to see Jawbreaker in L.A. Tickets were $40 to $75, but because so many scalpers in the secondary markets bought them, the Jawbreaker ticket economy crashed, and scalpers can't sell them quick enough. I literally paid $8 for a Jawbreaker ticket. People who are ticks and want to cut into my money simply to raise prices are now subsidizing my Jawbreaker experience. So while you might be upset about ticket prices, look at the alternative. Period. Great work on the podcast. I listen every week I listen every week while working as a correctional officer. My job is very boring, medical record keeping, so every minute helps make the week go quicker. And that's from Kev.
Correctional officer. I could just see this moment where, like, you know, shit starts to go down, the riot's about to kick in, and he goes, all right, I guess I got to kick some ass. So he puts on his headphones, turns it up, and it's fucking you complaining about the Benzingers or something. And then he just leaps into action.
Well, they have the Punk News Podcast ending prison riots. Kev, I see your point of view, and I think it's a fine line. Like Ticketmaster not only has enabled scalpers, they actually are scalpers themselves, and then a number of tickets get directly sent to secondary ticket markets without someone having the chance to buy them in the first place, which is insane. And I think we're beyond the breaking point. So I think the tickets could have been a little bit cheaper, but then again, they were sold out during the pre-sales. Like some people didn't even get a chance to buy them. So, I mean, listen, from a pure marketing standpoint or economic standpoint, tickets were right priced or even too cheap. But on the other hand, I kind of think that shows how messed up the economy is right now, too. Anyways, you can always reach that podcast at punknews.org. Let's get into some mail. Speaking of a messed up economy, Record Store Day 2018. It's April 21st this year. I believe it's April 21st this year. April 21st this year. And they've released the list of records coming out. And actually, a lot of punk this time around. Last year, not a whole lot of punk. This time, a lot of punk. We're getting records from Big Audio Dynamite, Circle Jerks, Johnny Thunders, Dwarves, Iggy Pop, Flaming Lips, Ramones, Red Cross, Lou Reed, The Stooges, Run the Jewels, Tim Armstrong, Limited 900 Unit Press, Motorhead, Teenage Bottle Rocket, The Lurkers reissue, Sloppy Seconds reissue, Pagans reissue, Sublime Rarity, as well as Chuck Berry, David Bowie, and some other stuff. I know Adam White is generally not too hot on Record Store Day this year in general. I don't know Stafford Sean's position. I've got a definite position this year. But what do you guys have to think about this year's list? And also Record Store Day, is it cool? Is it lame? What's the deal, baby?
So I've been going to Record Store Day. I started going to Record Store Day a couple years ago. And what I did last year is I went out and went around to a few stores, but I didn't buy any of the exclusives. I think I just kind of set aside $200 like to just like spend on like records that I would buy anyways, and just kind of went all out on that day, but didn't get any exclusives. Because I mean, the other thing isn't there some whole thing with like Record Store Day, or like the company behind it is just kind of screwing over the actual record companies with like the, I don't know, however expensive they sell the records and to them initially.
Yeah, there is some criticism towards Record Store Day in that, like, normally with records, they all take five of these, four of these. With Record Store Day, the record stores themselves kind of check off a want list, and then the Record Store Day ships them more or less what they feel like sort of weighted towards their wish list. However, those records are very expensive, and they're not returnable. So often, Record Store Day will ship, say you want, like, the Ramones records will sell. So you order, say, 20 Ramones records, they're all going to sell. But, you know, maybe you didn't ask for the Adam Sandler live record, which is like $40, you know. And I like Adam Sandler too, but who's going to spend $40 for a used CD you could get for literally 99 cents? And so record stores will get stuck with like five copies of those, and they'll sit there forever and not sell. And the record store is out, you know, $200, $150 for a bunch of records that no one's going to buy ever, you know.
Yeah. So I mean, I was never really motivated to get anything, any of the exclusives, and that kind of also soured my disposition towards that. Like I was never really kind of into any of that. But there are a few things that I'm looking at and seriously considering this year. That Teenage Bottle Rocket Warning Device reissue is definitely catching my eye. There's a Descendants 7-inch.
There is. I missed that. What's on that? It's that live. It's that track they put out that isn't on anything else. You're right.
Yeah, there's a split with the Queers and who was the guy who fronted Pink Lincoln's? I mean, there's a split that they're doing. The Vapors, Touche Amore has like a bunch of demos that they're putting out. Like it's a pretty cool list. And so there are definitely a couple of things that I am eyeing and definitely considering, but I don't know. I'll probably go out But it's not going to be so that I can get one of these exclusives. Like that's not really the main, I guess, attraction for me on Record Store Day. It's just kind of an excuse to go to the record store anyways.
Oh, this list. John.
Adam.
I can't feel anymore, John. I'm nothing matters. Nothing matters anymore. I don't know.
Record Store Day has basically made Adam White embrace a philosophy of nihilism and hopelessness towards the universe.
Oh, fuck. So I've enjoyed Record Store Day really for the same reasons that Sean just said that he did, where, you know, I'm happy to go to my store and support it. I've kind of like going to my a record store when it's sort of like when it's busy like that, when there's sort of an event happening, just because the communal aspect of it is kind of cool. Like, you don't usually get to kind of hang around with a bunch of music people in that same way when you're not, say, at a show. So it's interesting from a community standpoint, and I like it that for that reason. But, you know, and usually at least the stores around me, you know, they're using this as an excuse to have just like deals otherwise, right? So yeah, you come and get Record Store Day exclusives, but you know, everything else is 20% off, that kind of thing. So hey, I'm happy to go out and hang out and do that kind of thing. But I don't know, I was going through this list, and you are completely correct. Like, there is more punk stuff on it than there has been in the past few years. So from one perspective, that's cool. Nothing's moving me. Nothing's moving me, John. I went through and I just like read through this list, and I'm just like, you know, things that inspire no reaction at all out of me. You know, like here's another, you know, here's another version of the Stooges that we're gonna make available. I'm like, all right, that's.
I actually, Adam, I am a Stooges maniac, but that release is so pointless, and here's why. It's just the first Stooges album, and basically the Stooges outtake bonus that's been out for 10 years now. Like, do you really need the Stooges outtakes bonus on a $30 record? Like it's pointless.
And I was looking, you know? And I'm like, what is the thing here that is going to jump out and be interesting to me, right? And I was like, there was one thing on the list where it was like, it was a split between some band and the Distillers, right? And I was like, the Distillers haven't recorded anything in a while. Maybe that's an interesting thing. And I go and I read it, and it's like, well, this band is going to cover, and I don't have it in front of me, so forgive me, I don't know the band.
It's the Side-by-Side series.
This band is going to cover Dismantle Me, and then we're going to put the original version of Dismantle Me on the other side of the record by the Distillers. So it's like, oh, okay, well, so they're not even involved in this. So, and I'm going through, and there's just things that I'm just not moved by. And I think I realize what it is, at least from my standpoint, is that I've oriented myself like entirely behind like new stuff that is coming out. Like, what are these cool new bands that are coming out? Who's about to release something? What's coming up? I'm very clued in right now, I think, to like current releases and stuff that is happening and bands that are like going out and slugging it out and are young. And this, like, that's the one Record Store Day thing, and it's sort of just like a by the nature of the beast. Like, I understand why this isn't the case, but like none of these are young bands. It's like, it's none of these are bands that are on the up and coming that are doing anything interesting. This is all like
Run the Jewels, Adam White. Run the Jewels.
No, but they're all either bands that are huge, or bands that are established, so established that there's no risk, right? So there's no risk in going out and pressing like 3,000, you know, versions of whatever Cutting Room Floor Bowie stuff is out there and putting it out, because people are going to buy it, right? There's no risk in going out and them, you know, doing a some random ass Ramones release, you know, putting out a, what was it? There was a live, shit, what was it? There's like a live Iggy Pop record from 86, right?
Honestly, 80s, like, they're kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel. Like, Iggy's the man, but the 80s were, like, the late 80s were his
that's the kind of random ass shit that you would see on, like, Bomp Records back in the early 2000s, right? Where they were just, like, releasing all this, like, quasi bootleggy kind of stuff, right? Where,
Adam, the kicker is that 86 record that they're going to charge $45 for is a cheap ass Bomp Records CD, right? Already.
So, none of these kind of, like, there are very few bands, I think, right now that are legacy acts. Make it sounds like this is the wrong word for it, but there are very few bands that are established to that level where they're going to come up with something that I desperately need to run out and get. I don't know. Like the last time I had to run out and get something was the Gangsterville reissue that from Strummer. But the reason for that was that it was kind of hard to get those songs elsewhere anyways, right? So it was, you know, it was going out to get something where I was going to go home and put that record on my player and it was going to be a novel listening experience going in and listening to these things. But by the same stripe, if they decided, oh, you know what? We got a version of the first Clash LP, but instead of green on the cover or blue like some of the covers, this one is orange, right? I wouldn't go buy that shit, but I feel that people would. And that's what a lot of this is feeling like to me. So
Adam, you know what I literally bought this week?
What did you literally buy this week?
I literally bought the blue version of Clash 1.
The blue version of Clash 1 was a Canadian pressing.
Yes, I know. That's why I got it. So now I've got one of every Clash pressing, and not one of every, but every. I've got all the significant differences. I've got US, UK, Japan, and Canada, like the four main versions.
When I was a young high school punk, one of my friends went to London to meet some family or something like that. And they came back and they'd given me a copy of the first Clash LP that they'd bought out of a little record store where the LP is in perfect condition, but at some point the cover went missing. So whoever owned it in the UK just kind of like hand wrote all of the song titles on just like a flat cardboard cover. But then like with a marker kind of like did the Clash logo in a really nice thing. And I've always loved having this thing because like, A, the UK version of the first Clash record is really interesting, but just like, it's such like a random kind of like pre revival record store oddity that has kind of shown up in my life. But yeah, anyway, yeah, if they decided they were going to go reissue the Canadian blue cover of the first Clash record, I wouldn't go buy that either. Like I can't get excited about this stuff, and I don't know why. It may be because I'm dead, or it may be because, despite my love of vinyl and my general affinity to the idea of Record Store Day, it may be that this shit is boring.
I can't agree that everything here is boring. I thought last year and the year before was boring. Perhaps what you're feeling, Adam, is that Record Store Day is supposed to be about record lovers and also attract new buyers. But really, to a degree, what it does is it exploits the people that love it the most and kind of abuses them. In that, like this Flaming – like I've got a bunch of Flaming Lips stuff from Record Store Day. They usually put out neat stuff for Record Store Day. But if I see this, I'm tired of paying $17 for a 7-inch. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not fun, you know? I will say, people say, you know, oh, I got all this Record Store Day stuff, but I never play it. I don't know where that's coming from. I think maybe those people are susceptible to marketing or hype. I rock my Record Store Day stuff. I don't even differentiate. I love all my stuff I've got at Record Store Day. The Sublime releases, the Off releases, which I rock all the time. There is some stuff here that I'm very excited about that I probably will be getting. First is the Dwarves reissue. The Dwarves have a record called Lucifer's Crank. It was originally released on a 7-inch. It's got terrible sound quality. They're re-releasing it on a 12-inch EP and remastering it, and I'm hoping it'll make it sound a lot better because the 7-inch record, the songs are good, but it just sounds like garbage. And so that's really a record that needs to be cleaned up and refreshed. The other thing that I'm really, really – one of the two other things I'm really, really excited about is the Sublime – 10-inch. Sublime, what a lot of people think of Sublime as only having three albums, which is true, but before Sublime got kind of big, they put out probably 10 to 15 independent releases, 7-inches, 12-inches, cassette tapes. This is a release of one of the super rare self-release cassettes on vinyl. I prefer it to be on CD, but it's on a 10-inch record, and I am very excited for this. Last year, they put out a 12-inch of their first of the first large like distributed demo tape, and I was so happy to get that because I've wanted that for years. This is a 10-inch of the demo tape from before that, which is really, really cool. This, I mean, I've never even heard these tracks, so this is going to be very exciting. The other thing that I'm on the fence about is the David Bowie live record, and to me, this is what Record Store Day is all about: is putting out stuff that, the Run the Jewels 12-inch looks kind of cool, but that's going to be like $50 or $60, so I might have to let that one go. You know, I mean, I'm not paying $50 for a 12-inch single. However, the David Bowie thing is very exciting. It's David Bowie live in Berlin in 1978, I believe. It's live in London. I thought it was live in Berlin.
It's a Berlin era stuff, live, right?
There's some David Bowie museum exhibition right now, and they put out a live in Berlin EP that you can only get at the museum, which is cool. This is live in London during the Berlin period. I believe it's the same tour as Stages. The Stages live album is okay, not great. I'm hoping this will be better. I'm very excited about this, except last year they put out David Bowie live during the before the Young Americans tour. What's the 1984 album called? The one where he's like half dog on the album cover. What's the name of that album? It's not 1984, is it? Is that the name of the album?
Hold on.
Anyway, it's the one after Ziggy Stardust and after Aladdin Sane. Ziggy Stardust, Aladdin Sane, then the one where he's half dog, then the covers album. Well, anyway, while Adam looks that up, is they had that last year. I was thinking of getting it, but it was like literally $70 for like three records. I'm like, listen, I'm not going to pay $70 for one live album. Then Diamond Dogs. Then 6 months later, they put it out as a $12 CD, which was like the greatest thing ever. And it is a great, great live album. So with this record here, I'm thinking they're probably going to do the same thing. Like I'm not spending $70 for a live record, man. But I probably won't get this, and I'm going to bank on the fact that they're going to put it out as a CD for $12, like 6 months from now, which would be awesome. So we'll see. So listen, Record Store Day, I dig it. I still dig it. I think this year is better than most. To a degree, I'm happy there's not a ton of stuff I want, because, man, I hate blowing like $100 at Record Store Day. I only want to spend like $35, but I'll probably end up spending about $60. But there's some cool stuff here, a lot of junk, and like I said, I don't know if Record Store – oh, and the Tim Armstrong record. If I see that, I'll buy that just because it's an interesting thing. But if I don't see it, I'm not going to sweat it.
Not going for the Vitamin String Quartet Flaming Lips album?
Oh, yes, I would. I didn't even see that. I saw the Flaming Lips 7-inch, but I would definitely
get
that.
What about the Hawkwind thing?
No, see, they did the same thing last year. Last year, they put out a $30 Hawkwind record. It was literally just their six biggest hits. Like, I'm not going to spend $30 for songs that I have on like five different CDs. You know what I mean? It's like that. That's just stupid. Like, who's buying that? Like that's just a dumb release. You know, like they should put out stuff that has a purpose, not stuff that's purpose is just to sell $30 records to people that don't even really want it. Anyway, speaking of expensive records, the adventure of the world's most expensive record continues. As you guys know, in 2015, Wu-Tang Clan said, we're only going to make one copy of our record Once Upon a Time in Shaolin, and we're going to sell it for $2 million. And some mysterious benefactor bought it for $2 million. And of course, Adam White, who was that mysterious benefactor?
That was our good buddy, the punk rock tangentially, that was a weird pronunciation of that word, related Pharma Bro Martin Shkreli.
And it's funny to call him a bro because he's definitely not a bro. I mean, he's not nice. But
no,
he's not a
I don't
bro.
Know. Like you know, he sort of owns bro-y. This Pharma Bro tag now.
If you've watched 5 minutes of one of his live streams, he definitely lives up to that label.
See, but I think to be like a bro, you kind of got to be like a guy that like, you know, is kind of an asshole. Well, he's an asshole, but like a jockey, like to me, a bro is kind of a variant of the jock. This guy's not a jock. Am I wrong?
I think we need to quantify or we really qualify like which flavor of douchebag the guy is. Like just.
Well, he's a douchebag. So anyways, he bought this record for $2 million and, you know, he threatened to destroy it and he said he was going to sell it and he didn't sell it, blah, 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 blah. Well, anyway, he got convicted of securities fraud and he was out on bail, but then he offered to pay somebody like $40 a hair to assault Hillary Clinton. So the judge put him in jail awaiting sentencing. And meanwhile, due to his securities fraud, the court has authorized post-conviction asset seizure. Basically, the court can authorize the taking of your assets, what you gained from the money used in illegal activities. So he's got to turn over all his cool stuff, the Wu-Tang record. He's got a rare Lil Wayne record. He's got some very rare paintings. So the judge authorized taking $7.4 million worth of Shkreli's assets. However, he might not lose the record. If he turns over $7.4 million instead, then he gets to keep his Wu-Tang record and his Lil Wayne record and the rest of that stuff. But if he doesn't turn it over, then the court's going to take his stuff, auction it off to the highest bidder, and take that off his tab. So we'll know within the next month or so who the new owner of the Wu-Tang album will be, unless Shkreli is so desperate that he wants to keep it himself in his very worthy clutches, if you will. Meanwhile, he's going to be sentenced this Friday, and he's looking at very long jail time. We'll see how much he actually gets.
I'm half convinced that you are tempting this guy to somehow come after you.
He's in jail. What do you
I don't know,
me?
Man. But you have even prior to him being in jail, you've poked at this guy, and he'll react to people on the internet.
I'm gonna send someone to steal your hair, John.
I'll cut off my own hair and sell it to him. Actually, Adam, you bring up a good point, and here's what it is. It is, I am not a fan of stone throwing. That is, I'm not a fan of drawing blood from someone just because everyone else is drawing blood from him. Are we reveling too much in this guy's misery? Is it unwholesome of us to do so? Or should we celebrate when bad people actually get punished for their wicked deeds because we lived in an unjust world? Or Stafford Sean. I didn't mean to throw that to Adam exclusively. Stafford Sean, by all means.
No, he definitely enjoys all the negative press. So I feel like...
So we're helping him?
What?
So we're actually helping him? By
yeah, I feel like we might be taking the wrong approach at this. Might be falling right into his trap, actually.
John, I feel like nothing would make you happier than to get some reaction out of Martin Shkreli. I feel that if we were to make a case study of all the headlines that you've ever written about this guy, it is pretty clear that you are casting a line and just dangling that worm in the water, and you're hoping that you get a bite.
Honestly, Adam, like if you want to do an interview, I certainly would do an interview. But that really is my goal. Is I'm very fascinated by this weird record that I mean, true or not true, this record has had a wild journey.
It's had one like none other. Like, I'll give you that.
So I'm enjoying like it's almost like a comic book or like this record like hip hop group releases a single copy of record. Some mysterious person buys it. It turns out it's a total douchebag. Now he's in jail. Now the government wants the record. Like, this is a crazy story. I'm really enjoying the story of this record more than I am slapping up Shkreli.
Next year it's on the record store day list.
We'll see. Well, they only have, it's one out of one.
just the one cop.
So I don't know. I mean, I definitely don't want to stop covering this record because I want to follow this record till its final owner. But I don't know. Do you guys think we should, you know, kind of fade away from the Shkreli, or should we keep mentioning him with regard to the? And also, I'm not running these headlines. You know, court orders seizure of most valuable record from convicted felon. That's a great headline.
Oh no, that's why I think you are just reveling in it. That's all.
Well, anyway, speaking of things people are reveling in, Adam White, there's a new Strung Out record. Tell us about it.
Okay, yeah, so there's a new Strung Out. I'm going to open the story here so I actually know what I'm talking about. So Strung Out was in the news recently because they parted ways with their drummer, and there was a lot of subtext about something that happened between the guys in the band that made that a reality. But moving on from that, the band, which is, they're at an anniversary, right? Are they in 20 years? I feel like they're celebrating something right now. Let's see. Can I confirm this?
Probably past
30 years. Sorry, 30 years. Yeah. 20. Yeah. So these guys are celebrating their 30 years together as a band. So they have done this through the impending release of an acoustic EP, which is called Blackout the Sky. It's coming out on May 11th on their longtime label, Fat Records. There are going to be 6 new songs on this record, along with a couple acoustic versions of their tracks Uncoil and Matchbook. So one of these new songs, which is called Town of Corazon, was premiered online. You can find it on YouTube. You can find a link to it over on Punk News. You should go check it out. So the two songs that they're bringing from their old releases and reviving them on this. So Uncoil comes from An American Paradox. Matchbook comes from Twisted by Design. So that's an old classic of theirs. So anyway, so they have this acoustic EP guy coming out here. You can check out the song right now. It is not, I guess, what you would maybe expect out of Strung Out if you are in them for being a kind of amped up metally skate punk band, because no drummer, but B, they're not playing acoustically and playing hard. They're doing at least on this particular song, you know, a pretty soft acoustic kind of ballad thing. What do you think of this, John? Is this something that is of interest to you? I ask, knowing your answer.
let me phrase it this way, Adam. I'm very happy that Stafford Sean is on the staff. He's bringing new flavor. I'm very happy that news editor Jade is on the staff. She's bringing a new flavor. However, Adam, wait, how did you and I become the Bash Brothers? How did you and I become the guys that listen to the hard shit? You know what I mean? Like, shouldn't the young kids be playing stuff that's offensive to us? How are you and I the guys that listen to the weird, hard shit? I feel like we're the macho tough guys these days. What happened?
I don't know.
For the record, I don't like this song. That's what you're implying.
Hey, we're talking as if Stafford Sean isn't here. Sean, no, I'm actually curious about your view on this. I mean, me and John, when it comes to like a band like Strung Out that we've been, you know, have been sort of like a factor in our music community for a long time, but I don't think either of us have been a particular fan of, like, how does something like this come off to you? Because you have not been listening to Strung Out for 30 years because you're like 12.
Yeah, I think it's fine. I mean, Strung Out as a band, I think this song is just kind of, there's not really much to it. It almost sounds like it used to be just kind of a full band version, but there wasn't really much distinguishing it, so they decided to make it acoustic to make it different. I don't know, that's just what maybe I'm reading into it too much, but it does seem almost like kind of forced acoustic, if that makes sense.
It does make sense.
Yeah, I mean, the song really didn't stick out to me all that much. And Strung Out as a band, I was briefly kind of pretty into Strung Out, probably like freshman year. But, you know, they don't really stick around, like stick with people, I feel like, as much as some of the other bands that came out of that same scene.
It's weird because there are people over the, like, I'm saying this as if they're fictional people, but like I've never actually met one. But it's always seemed, at least from a looking at the punk news audience, that Strung Out is a kind of band that has a devoted, you know, group of just like diehard will will follow them to the day they die and eat up everything that they do, fans. And then everyone else who I've known, which has always just been like no one wishes strung out any ill, but yeah. But no one has much of a strung out opinion, at least in any of my circles. So they're a band that I always feel like I'm dancing on eggshells talking about, because like they're not a band that it feels like I want to make fun of. Like people chuck at like Pennywise all the time because Pennywise is sort of inherently goofy, right? And I don't think that like anyone in Pennywise, like I'm sure they would be defensive if, you know, you were just making fun of their shit to their face, but you know, I don't think they would be like wounded. I think that they'd be like, you know, well, hey, we got our fans that like our thing, and we realize that what we do is kind of silly, but hey, you know, we're Pennywise and we're having a good time. Like Strung Out, I feel that like they I kind of want to hurt people who are the devoted Strung Out fans, and not because they're like fragile, but because like they have this very genuine love and appreciation for this band that isn't doing anything wrong, and I don't want to like I don't want to like just attack people because I'm not super into something, but yeah, I don't know. It's tough. I'm not sure. Not sure.
Now that I'm looking through their discography, I'm kind of walking back on my statement, because they do have some really killer tracks just kind of scattered throughout their discography. But I guess it's kind of similar to Pennywise, where it's like I can't listen to them for like I couldn't listen to them for like an hour, like straight. But you know, here and there, I think they've got some solid material.
Yeah. So if you are a strung out person and you listen to the show, I kind of want you to write us and what are the five strung out songs that someone needs to go listen to really get into it? Because, and I guess coming back to this acoustic song, this probably isn't one of them, because I think this is pretty uncharacteristic of what's strung out, you know, what they have going on. So anywho, but this is coming out, so you may want to go listen to it.
Well, speaking of another thing that's coming out, Stafford Sean was champing at the bit, champing at the bit to talk about this new record. Stafford Sean, tell us about the Remo Drive record and them signing to Epitaph.
Yeah, I think this is really cool because, I mean, I think I kind of picked up on these guys when they were like really just kind of starting to break out last year. Probably, yeah, just a bit under a year ago, where they came out with their debut album called Greatest Hits, which I know is presumptuous, but like, you know, it was a good album. I liked it a lot, and they have really kind of grown as a band in terms of fan base, especially. And it's good to see them signing to Epitaph. But they're releasing a new EP that's called Pop Music, and they are selling pop, as in the drink soda pop, along with their new EP, which I think is pretty cool idea, except for the fact that when I was looking into possibly buying this EP, until I realized that if you want to have the one with the drink, it is significantly more in shipping because you can't use media mail for that. So, you know, it's a cool idea, but I don't know. I don't think I'll actually bite on that, but it's cool. It's great to see these guys like signed to Epitaph, really kind of hitting it big. And I think it's a cool idea. The new song they released is, I think it's pretty good. You know, not their best, but I'm interested to see what this new EP holds.
Fun fact about the concept of a record called Greatest Hits. Do you guys know what famous record was similarly titled that and led to a huge breakup, which then led to the creation of perhaps one of the most influential sounds in music of all time?
I feel like I know this, but I Don't.
The Wailing Wailers, who would become Bob Marley and the who would become the Wailers and then Bob Marley and the Wailers, their second record on Leslie Kong's label, which is Beverly's, was called The Best of the Wailers. And Bunny Wailer got so mad at that because he said, how can you say it's the best? We're just getting started. And also being a devout Rastafarian, he saw it as a bad omen. So that led to a huge argument with Leslie Kong. The Wailing Wailers stopped recording with Leslie Kong and went to record with Lee Scratch Perry, who of course wrote the incredibly influential and famous reggae songs, which would go on to become some of the most famous reggae songs ever, including Steer It Up, Natural Mystic, Duppy Conqueror, African Herbsman, Keep On Moving, and so forth.
That was not the thing that I thought you were going to pull out here, but okay.
Oh,
I don't know. It seemed like it was like an 80s answer, whatever you were getting at. I don't know why. That's where I was thinking. Whalers threw me.
Here's an 80s. Here's an 80s fun fact. Do you know who wrote the 80s hit Electric Slide?
Who wrote the 80s hit Electric Slide, John?
To Bob Marley and
Bunny
the Wailers.
Bunny Wailer of the Wailers. Good guess, Stafford Sean. And this is and of course, who was the singer of Electric Slide?
Bob Marley.
It's a female, so
I'm going to Google it as you type here because I don't actually know the answer to this.
It is none other than perhaps my favorite of the I3s, of course, who were the backing band for Bob Marley and the Wailers. I just forgot her name. Not Rita Marley.
We didn't know, but you.
Not Rita Marley and not Judy Mowate, but my favorite of the I3s, who I can't even remember her name. Oh, my God. What the hell's her name?
Marcia Griffiths.
Oh, my God.
Marcia Griffiths.
Marcia Griffiths. Yeah, yes, okay. Yes. Yeah. So anyways, let's listen to Electric Slide, co-written by, and actually there's an earlier version with Bunny Wailer on it, and it's terrible. Like, it's really bad. But this is Marcia Griffiths and Bunny Wailer doing Electric Slide. It's electric!
We'll be right back. Bean. It's electric. Woogie, woogie, woogie. Ooh, it's shocking. It's electric. Woogie, woogie, woogie. You got Mr. Kelly with the problem, Mr. Kelly. She's a moving along with electric. She's all got the moving. You gotta know it. It's electric. Woogie, woogie, woogie. That you can't hold it. It's electric. Woogie, woogie, woogie. But you know it's there.
And we're back, and that was an 80s reggae for you. But let's talk about some other stuff in the past. And that, we're running kind of long tonight, so we'll speed it along. Adam, are you good for another 10 or 15 minutes?
Yeah, I'm okay, as long as you don't do any trivia that we're going to fail at again. So here, let me read this one. You can chime in here. So after 66 years as a weekly print publication, NME, the UK British paper, is going to start the UK British paper. Holy fuck. I shouldn't talk anymore, John. Podcast over. The UK-based music paper will stop producing a physical magazine. Although the digital version is going to continue, the magazine has had trouble with its physical format. It became free in 2015, but it's still struggled with sustainability. The parent company that owns NME now, Time Warner, the executive there said, "We have also faced increasing production costs and a very tough print advertising market. Unfortunately, we have now reached a point where the free weekly magazine is no longer financially viable. It is in the digital space where effort and investment will focus to secure a strong future for this famous brand." So, there is no more print versions of NME, which is, like, as we said, it is a pretty lengthy history behind that thing. They announced this before we ran our article. I saw people on Twitter chucking at the announcement about it because there was a press release went out that said something like NME focuses on digital future or something like that. And it was like
it was NME to expand into digital.
Bury the lead there, right? Like, oh wait, hold on. So John, is this something that you ever read?
Actually, yes, I have read NME before. NME is one of the better British music magazines. Britain is famous in that, America doesn't have that many music magazines. We've got, Rolling Stone, which is not doing so hot. We've got Alternative Press, Substream. And those are pretty much the only three big music magazines in the United States. There's Fader, I guess. So there's like four or five maybe. In the UK, there are like 20 music magazines. There's Team Rock. There's it's called like Vinyl Collector. There's Goldmine. There's NME. There's just magazine after magazine after magazine. And man, I see them at the bookstore and I want to buy them every single time I see them. But they're always like $20 because they're imported, But man, like Britain has an amazing number of magazines. And it's crazy how magazines all over are dying, but Britain still has dozens of music magazines, and Britain is much smaller than the United States, which is crazy. So I don't know if they're all dying or they're just so small that they can exist at that level, and maybe NME was too big so it couldn't exist at that level. One thing I will say about British magazines is, even though I love them, they kind of come off as chewing gum to me often, in that they're more tabloid than American music magazines. Like if you read a Rolling Stone interview, it's written like Esquire interviews are written like Rolling Stone interviews, and you get as influenced, of course, by Gay Talese, the famous writer. You get sort of a deeper understanding of the person, or at least that's the goal. Whereas UK magazines, to me, kind of seem to dip into the surface, maybe go a little bit below the surface, but never really get down into it. It's almost more like factual rather than it is descriptive, if that makes any sense. That being said, NME was a particularly worthy magazine, and that they would put punks on the cover, even though they weren't necessarily a punk magazine. Actually, they weren't a punk magazine. They put Effed Up on the cover. They put Amoebix on the cover. They put Johnny Rotten on the cover. They put Crass on the cover. They put a lot of punks on the cover which honestly Punk doesn't sell, so it's no wonder they're going out of business. I thought MME was cool in that they would cover Punk along with mainstream, along with indie stuff. If we look at the one on at a Punk News, it's Joe Strummer after he left the Clash. Joe Strummer, Anti-Nowhere League, right next to Dead or Alive, Roxy Music, and Mick Farren and Blondie, which is crazy. I mean, that's quite the mix up. That's quite the lineup. That being said, you know you're not doing so hot when you can't even give your magazine away, which MME couldn't do. So you know they're just going to become another online magazine, and it bums me out how physical magazines are dying, because it really is something special to a physical magazine. The writing is better. The writing is better because it's more of an investment, so you better make it better than just shitting some out on the internet, which is practically free. You get the covers, you hold it in your hand. I honestly believe that reading physical books and reading physical magazines, because there's a cost in making them, the writing tends to be better and it raises a person's intellect. Whereas on the internet, where things are just going for pure views, the writing gets dumber and dumber and dumber, and I think it lowers people's intellect. And so I think that's very sad and kind of scary, and I don't know if there's a way out of that. Quagmire. That swamp. That trap. That landmine field. That molasses.
I'm just gonna let you molasses bath. Holy fuck! it's been a long time since I've purchased a music magazine of any stripe, but there was a time when I was in college where like I really enjoyed like picking up that physical thing, and I remember there was a while where I was grabbing, you know. You'd go and you get a copy of like Punk Planet or Mojo or one of those things, depending on who they were featuring. And, you know, and I liked having them around. It was an enjoyable pace at which to grab, to consume stuff. And Enemy, I always had the impression of them being more tabloid than not. So, you know, on the one hand, I'm not going to shed too many tears for Time Warner not being able to keep one of their myriad of media properties viable in the same way. But on the other hand, you know, welcome to being poor on the internet, Enemy, because that's where the rest of us are.
Yeah, I just realized I'm talking shit on the internet music publications, and that's exactly what Punk News is.
It's only because people never publish our magazine, John. They don't want it. It's too real for them. Well,
here's a 75 page essay on Hawkwind, followed by a 75 page essay on the dwarves. Sales, lots of sales. Well, anyway, Stanford Sean, you got an opinion on NME?
Pretty much none.
Stephen, have you ever read a physical magazine in your entire life?
Yeah, I've never read a copy of NME, but yes, I have read physical magazines in my life, John.
Fair enough. Well, speaking of something that everybody's into, the Warped Tour, they've announced their final cross-country lineup. Interestingly, Warped Tour said, we're calling it quits, it's the end. It appears they've stepped back from that a little bit, and now they're not saying it's the end, they're saying they're not doing cross-country tours anymore. Prior to the announcement of the recent lineup, Kevin Lyman, the guy who owns and operates and runs Warped Tour, was saying it's going to be a celebration of all eras of Warped Tour. And then he released the lineup for this year's Warped Tour. And the lineup of this year's Warped Tour basically breaches all eras of punk, including Bowling for Soup, Asking Alexandria, 303, Black Veil Brides, Real Big Fish, Pennywise. Taking Back Sunday, This Wild Life, Under Oath, Water Parks, Sum 41, and Mayday Parade.
Who are these bands?
To say that people at Punk News were underwhelmed would be an underwhelming statement. And actually, I saw lots of anger on Punk News and the internet all over. I'm going to say my quick piece about this, and I'll let you guys respond. People were like, Warped Tour sucks. I can't believe this. You know, how could Kevin Lyman do this to us? You know, where's the bands that we want? And I'm thinking to myself, you realize that Warped Tour is essentially for children. Why are you a 35-year-old, a 36-year-old, a 30-year-old? Why are you demanding that a children's property cater to you when its purpose is mainly to cater to children? So I thought it was very, not ungracious, ungainly if people say, hey, this sucks. You know, how could Warped Tour do this? It's like, yeah, because you're 35. You're not 16. You know, grow up, Sonny Jim.
Well,
grow up.
Actually, that was the thing. Like, if this were, if the lineup last year hadn't happened, I wouldn't care about this at all. And I guess this is from the child's perspective, technically. But I'm not into pretty much any of these bands. I would be fine with the Warped Tour lineup if these past 2 years were switched, because I would have just accepted that, like, Warped Tour is for a different audience. They've evolved. They've moved past that. But then they kind of teased out this kind of idea that they were kind of moving back to their roots. And then they announced that it was going to be their last cross-country tour. And it kind of seemed like they were kind of headed in a route where they were kind of going to, obviously they've still got to get those young bands that are going to pull in their target demographic that they've kind of been pulling in for the past few years. But it did seem like they were going to try to kind of do kind of greatest hits of Warped Tour, like kind of their biggest success stories. And I realized that they can't get all of, like, the giant bands that they've helped launch, but I don't think that it would be too far out there to at least get kind of a bit more of those, a bit more of, like, the sounds of the different eras of Warped Tour. Like, there's a couple of bands that kind of play into that, but there were a couple of bands that played into that in 2016's lineup, like Less Than Jake and the Interrupters. I think we're both on 2016, so it doesn't, it feels like it's almost like out of place given the kind of turnaround that they had kind of indicated in last year's lineup.
Yeah, to his defense, though, is that's kind of what he tried last. Like, he had a lot of old school punk bands on Warped Tour last year, and it was a sale. The tour did not do well. People voted with their dollars. People do not want to go to Warped Tour to see old punk bands.
Yeah, but I mean, the tour is ending. It seemed like it would be
$1 million over that. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, this. But
you mentioned water parks, and water parks is definitely my least favorite of this kind of new crop of pop punk that is coming up. I've tried them out a few times, and I can't stand that band.
What it seems like to me is that this is not some big final blowout. This is going out with a whimper, and it's, which is fine, except that I think that the lead up to this made it sound like it was going to be some big blowout. And yeah, like, it is strange when you go onto their website there, and it's listed now as, like, our final cross country tour, but which leaves the door open to, like, you know, oh, Warped Tour will do something else, right? Oh, because I'm sure that we're going to learn next year that it's going to be like, oh, it just goes up the West Coast now, or something like that, right? Whereas the talk up until, like, this announcement was that, like, it's over. Like, this is it. We're getting out. And there, do you remember the, I don't know if we didn't post a story about it because I don't think it was news, but there was this mild, like, Twitter blow up that happened a few weeks ago
where
whoever runs the Warped Tour Twitter account was like speaking quite just like out in the open. And just kind of like getting into it with some bands and with some people. And it was kind of weird, but and on the one hand, it sort of kept up the narration, or it kept up the narrative that this is legit ending. And, you know, we don't need to necessarily be nice to everyone right now. We're going to, like, let our tie, you know, we're going to loosen our tie a little bit and, you know, let our punk rock side actually shine through and, you know, ruffle some feathers. And I was like, that's kind of cool. Like, it would be kind of cool if they, you know, they went out on a little bit of, like, a fuck it note where they were just going to go say, you know what, we're going to book the bands. that we want to hear. We don't want to book the bands that are just going to, like, you know, pull in the kids, because we don't even like those bands. And yeah, we're going to get a little bit scrappy with people in public because we don't need to maintain this as a brand anymore. And, like, just seeing it go out like that and just end as some sort of, like, on a bit of a punk rock note, I think would have been kind of neat. But this looks, you know, this looks like any other modern Warped Tour lineup, in that it's, you know, it's got, like, Less Than Jake and then, like, a bunch of pop punk bands who I've never heard of before. And you know, and
ironically, I know we've been talking shit about Pennywise Ire podcast, but they do look like, you know, if I were to go, like, that would be the band that I would probably want to see the most. I've seen them a couple times, and they're always great live, even if, like, I don't listen to them much outside of that. I mean I rarely, like, sit down and listen to a Pennywise record, but their live shows are a good time. So
I want to see the Interrupters, just because I appreciate their dogged determination. Like, I've gone from not caring to liking them just because they stick it out for so long. Listen, speaking of somebody that's sticking it out, two quick last stories. Alice Bag, she released a new video. She's got her second solo album coming out on Don Giovanni Records. The video is for 77, and it's got Kathleen Hanna in it. It's got Charlie Manson in it, Seth Bogart. And one other person, and basically it's an homage to Dolly Parton's famous movie 9 to 5. I checked this out. I dug this song. Alice Bag was, of course, in Alice and the Bags, an amazing early West Coast punk band. You guys check this out. You dig this? Do not dig this?
I thought this was great.
Yeah, this was super fun.
Yeah,
it's
all right. Check out.
No, it's cool seeing seeing Kathleen Hanna and from Bratmobile, what's her name?
I don't know much about Bratmobile, honestly.
No, but the other guest star, you just read her name.
Oh, Shirley Manson, no. Garbage.
Shit, come on. Now I gotta look it up. Now, a lot of me Googling stuff on this episode. This isn't good here. Allison Wolf. Dolly Parton. Yeah. So, it's cool seeing those guys, you know, that were from that, like, from that Riot Grrrl movement, you know, all kind of, like, show up together on a little project like this. It's great. And the song is super fun and, you know, certainly timely given, you know, the world and how it's, you know, looking at women's issues right now. So yeah, cool. I like this. It's great.
Last thing, here's another John band, The Garden. They've released a new video for their, let's see, this would technically be their fifth album. They've released a video from their fifth album. The fifth album is called Mirror Might Steal Your Charm, and the track is called Stallion, and it's got Fletcher Shears dancing around with the devil and burning money. And I dug this. It was grim and gritty, and honestly, it was less electronic than I thought it was going to be. I think there wasn't any electronics at all, so it's kind of a throwback for the band. I dug this track. I dig The Garden. I think they are one of the coolest punk bands out there today.
Yeah, The Garden has never really done much for me, but I also love this track. I thought it was great, really grabbed me. Also, it was interesting that the two videos that you decided to share tonight both revolved around people destroying U.S. currency. I don't know.
Indeed.
I don't know if there was any. Is there something I'm missing just going on the news about that, or is that just like
punk trope?
News
is Punk news is multitudes upon multitudes, Stanford Sean. Like I said, I love The Garden in that they're so punk, but they're not like oi, oi, oi punk. They're not sad beardo punk. They're not like they're not even like garage punk. They're just like their own thing, and I think they're just fantastic and unique, and that's why I like them. There's nobody like them. Adam White, any last comments?
This is a Garden song that you made me listen to that I actually kind of liked. Not that I disliked anything overtly from them, but I just don't remember any of it. But this I do, and it was cool. So, yeah. There you go. John, this has been a long show. I think we should wrap it up.
Yes. You don't want to play a song?
I got songs, but, you know.
Let's save it until next week, then. Stafford Sean, any last words? Anything you want to say to defend millennials and their ilk?
The Garden would be millennials, wouldn't they?
They are.
Yeah. So
and they're not.
So there are some good millennials, I guess.
I'm not even saying millennials are bad. I'm saying perhaps they're even better due to their insistence at ignoring authority and doing what they want. Adam White, representing the old men. Why are the old men the guys that win out in the end?
Because we got all the money, John. I don't know if that's true. It's not.
It's all about the Benjamin. Really,
but yeah, hey, sure. Anyways, if anyone wants to write us letters, but don't write us letters about this episode, but write us letters. podcast@punknews.org is how you do that. And we're going to wrap up. So
send us money.
Send money. That would be good.
This has been a Valor Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or, you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at greg@valorundergroundstudios.com.